You're listening to the Diplomats Podcast on Asian Geopolitics. As always, I'm your host, Ankit Panda, recording in Washington, D.C. And Katie's still away, so I'm going to have on the show, back on the show, actually, a familiar face, Sebastian Strangio, the Diplomats' Southeast Asia editor, to help us go over the really remarkable outbreak of a military conflict, essentially, between Thailand and Cambodia. As we record this, that conflict does appear to now have been effectively ended with a ceasefire agreement that was announced on July 28th, mediated by Malaysia. But, Sebastian, I'm hoping today we can go a little bit over why this conflict broke out. What is the origin of this territorial dispute that hasn't really flared up in a while but did flare up this year? What exactly happened in the course of the conflict to the extent that we know, because obviously this is still very fresh and quick moving. And then we'll reflect a little bit about what this tells us about domestic politics in both countries, potential geopolitical ramifications, and about the role of ASEAN, this organization we keep coming back to on this podcast. But of course, these kinds of moments, I think, tell us quite a bit about ASEAN's both limitations and potentially with this ceasefire, some of the opportunities that present themselves. But that's enough for me. Walk us through the origins of this actual dispute between the two countries. I know this goes back a long time and we don't have to dwell on the history too much, but you know, why did this longstanding territorial dispute flare up this year?
Well, as you say, the conflict has deep roots in the colonial period when the border between Siam, as it then was, and French Indochina, of which Cambodia was a part, then was set. But there were ambiguities in how the border was demarcated and areas that were not fully demarcated and disagreements about how to interpret the border treaty signed in the first decade of the 20th century. And so this has created a, you know, an issue of dispute that has, you know, resurfaced periodically over the past century, most notably during the crisis over Prayvihear Temple in 2008, which initiated 3 years of sporadic tensions and armed conflict along the border, particularly around this temple, which is perched on the cliff face that makes up the border between the two countries. I think that, you know, the outbreak of fighting this year seems to have been preceded by an announcement by both governments of an intention to negotiate their maritime border, which is also undemarcated, mm-hmm. in particular to resolve the overlapping claims area, a 27,000 square kilometer part of the Gulf of Thailand, which is believed to harbor valuable oil and gas deposits. And so obviously for both governments, led by close allies as they were, the son of Hun Sen of Cambodia and the daughter of Thaksin Shinawat of Thailand, Hun Sen and Thaksin having been close allies and good friends for many years, it was thought that this was finally a time when both sides could put aside their differences and negotiate this on a rational basis. But of course, the domestic political context inside Thailand led to Thaksin's opponents beginning to attack this plan, accusing the government of getting ready to sell out Thai territory, particularly the island of Koh Kud in the Gulf of Thailand, to Cambodia. And this led to both sides hardening their positions under pressure from their nationalist fringes. And then the OCA talks essentially stalled sometime late last year. And then tensions appeared to migrate to the land border. Exactly the connection between these two is unclear, but there was an incident in February in which Cambodian soldiers and their families were videoed singing a patriotic anthem at Tam Wan Tom Temple, the same place where the conflict erupted last Thursday. And this led to, according to satellite analysis conducted by the Australian Strategic Policy Institute, a rapid buildup by both sides along the border. There was a clash, an armed clash that killed one Cambodian soldier on May 28th. And then the reinforcement of border infrastructure and the surging of assets into this region continued rapidly after that, which culminated in the clash on July 24th. So that's sort of the background. I would add that the presence of Angkorian temples along this border for the Cambodian side raises the emotional and political stakes considerably. Mm-hmm. But even for Thailand, you know, the history of lost territories, the loss of territories to the colonial empires, which were the way that Thailand managed to stave off full colonization by the West, have left a very deep wound in the Thai nationalist imaginary. Making any reminder of these treaties, such as the one signed with the French that set this border in 1907, this made these things subjects of intense nationalist sensitivity. So both nations, found it very hard to back down and to take steps to de-escalate the dispute once things began to intensify.
Yeah, so, you know, I think let's dig in a little bit on the actual conflict, which I guess we saw just about 4 days of fairly intense fighting. I mean, just the numbers that I've seen reported publicly about the numbers of civilians displaced, I think really seem fairly remarkable. Is it right? I mean, is your reading that it's about over 100,000 civilians on both sides?
The latest figure that I saw cited in the press was 270,000 in total.
Yeah.
It's much larger than the Prévert conflict.
Yeah, that's quite remarkable. So let's talk a little bit about, I mean, just these last few days. So, some pretty intense escalatory spirals between the two sides. What's your sense of just how much escalation each party wanted to essentially pursue here? I mean, obviously, both Cambodia and Thailand took steps to essentially pursue their goals, as it were. But what's your sense of the ways in which the escalation dynamics played out, bringing us to this ceasefire that was, of course, mediated by the Malaysians?
I feel like both sides had a certain degree of political incentive to encourage the conflict. We can go into the details about exactly why, but I don't think either side wanted a full-scale war.
Right.
And so I feel that, I think the outbreak of the fighting on July 24th is still hotly contested between the two sides. So we really don't know who fired the first shot or took the first step, to turn this conflict hot. But I think that both sides were relatively happy for a limited border exchange. All of the attacks remained confined to, 5 or 10 kilometer area along the disputed border. And I think that neither side showed much intention of expanding the theater beyond that. Although, of course, given the escalatory dynamics at play, I think that this was a very serious risk, especially once nationalist passions were engaged in the conflict. I said before, it was very hard for either side to take the first step or be seen to back down in the face of assaults on their sovereignty. But I do think both sides, beneath the bluster, wanted a settlement. And it's not surprising that they managed to broker a ceasefire. Whether that, leads to a more fundamental resolution to this border dispute, I'm very skeptical of. But at least the fighting has stopped now, and the two sides can at least, hopefully, return to the status quo ante.
Yeah, so does the ceasefire seem, I mean, first of all, does the ceasefire seem sustainable? Because, on one level, I think if neither side is really looking for a broader escalation and this was really about sating kind of domestic nationalist passions, then that's a pretty good outcome for the political leadership in both countries. But then, narratives matter. So what is the face-saving narrative for, both the Thais and the Cambodians here? What are they kind of telling their nationalist constituencies about why this ceasefire essentially suits their interests and why this conflict should stop right now?
This is unclear as of yet. I mean, yeah. The agreement just happened yesterday, and I haven't really seen attempts to justify this and explain this to the people. I mean, interestingly, Cambodia has all along, since the dispute erupted on May 28th with the armed clash that killed a Cambodian soldier, Cambodia has professed a desire to take this dispute to the International Court of Justice. And so a lot of its messaging, both to its own public and to the international community as a whole, has been based around the idea that Cambodia wants international mediation. Thailand, of course, has rejected ICJ intervention, not least because the ICJ ruled against it in the Prévert Temple case on two occasions. And Thailand has not recognized the jurisdiction of the ICJ for that reason since 1960. And so Thailand was bound to reject that. But the outcome of the ceasefire is a return to bilateral talks to de-escalate the current crisis. Firstly, military to military talks along the border. And then on August the 4th, a meeting of the General Border Committee, which the two sides established in 2000 to handle these sorts of disputes. And so the Cambodians have seemingly abandoned, or at least they've agreed to what Thailand preferred, a bilateral resolution to the crisis. The fact that this ceasefire was negotiated by a third party, by ASEAN, which Thailand a couple of days ago was holding out against, may suggest maybe the face-saving aspect to this for the Cambodian government. On the Thai side, I haven't really seen anything to suggest, you know, how the Thai government is presenting this to the public. But I do think the current government in Thailand will continue to come under pressure from the nationalist, royalist, right wing, as it has done, in a whole lot of issues unrelated to the border dispute over the past several months.
Yeah, well, as you said, you know, it's still very early days, so we'll get a better indicator on both those fronts, I think, going ahead. Were you surprised by sort of Malaysia's role here? I mean, Malaysia is currently the chair of ASEAN. So is this Malaysia acting essentially out of a sense of obligation, essentially, as the current chair of ASEAN? Or was there something unique about the Malaysian leadership right now that really made Malaysia something of a natural mediator? Were you surprised that the Malaysians were the ones to play this role of convening the leaders from both sides to get to the ceasefire?
I'm not really surprised. I think this is really, a bilateral dispute between two ASEAN member states. Yeah. This is basically table stakes for ASEAN. It's come under a lot of pressure for its supposed inaction on the conflict in Myanmar and its difficulties in forging a consensus on the South China Sea disputes that, of course, involve several ASEAN member states. But a bilateral dispute between two ASEAN members really should be, there's no excuse for ASEAN not to take the lead on this. And I think Anwar, all of his comments since assuming the chairmanship at the start of this year have talked about the need to fortify ASEAN's international credibility. And so I think this is ASEAN functioning essentially as it was designed to function. The question now is, Anwar has talked about sending observers and putting mechanisms, ASEAN mechanisms, in place in order to ensure the stability of this ceasefire. So this will be a further test. But I think it's worth noting that the lack of apparent ASEAN interest in the Prae Vihear Temple crisis in 2008 was something that I think angered the Cambodian government particularly. So I think that, the fact that ASEAN appears to be playing a more active role in taking this conflict a little bit more seriously is a good sign. And we'll have to wait and see, because obviously a lot depends on the ceasefire holding and as you mentioned before, domestic political constituencies in both Thailand and Cambodia, and whether they're happy with the current outcome. But, there's a lot of water still to go under the bridge.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that's a really useful kind of reflection on ASEAN, which, of course, has gotten its fair share of criticism in recent years in dealing with a number of these regional issues that you cited. This is the Asia Geopolitics podcast, and, I've been reading a lot of kind of coverage of this, and, there is obviously the temptation to slot these two countries, Thailand and Cambodia, into their respective great power camps, right? The Thais being an American ally and Cambodia being a very close partner of China in a variety of ways. We've had a statement from, of course, President Trump taking credit for the ceasefire. I guess China's been a little bit more nuanced in the way it's sort of maneuvered as this broke out. What, if anything, is there to say at this point about how this border flare-up between Thailand and Cambodia kind of slots into these broader geopolitical dynamics? Is that just simply overwrought at the moment, or is there something there?
I do think to describe this, as I saw a lot of people doing on social media, as a U.S.-China proxy conflict was a little bit simplistic. I mean, obviously China has very good relationship with the Thai government, with all parties from the Thai political spectrum, really. And as well as good relationship with Cambodia. And I don't think either the US or China wanted to see this develop into that sort of thing. I think both probably saw this as a needless conflict that should be resolved swiftly, in the interests of everybody involved. I do think that on the Cambodian side, one of the puzzles, I think, for a lot of observers, both of regional diplomacy and also Cambodian domestic politics, is the steps taken by the Cambodian government to escalate this conflict. The ASPI satellite analysis shows that Cambodia was responsible for a majority of the escalatory steps in the lead up to the outbreak of fighting on July 24th. And the, you know, and of course, former Cambodian Prime Minister Hun Sen leaked a phone call regarding the border dispute with Pe Tong Tan, the Thai Prime Minister, who's since been suspended because of that. And the question of Hun Sen, why he's doing what he's doing, and why he sought to stoke tensions with Thailand, even if he's not fully responsible for the conflict, why he did this. And I think the question of China is an important factor here. After the 2008 Prae Vihear crisis, I think Hun Sen realized that ASEAN couldn't really protect Cambodian sovereignty if push came to shove. And the inaction of ASEAN, or apparent inaction on the dispute at the time, reinforced his idea that he needed a more powerful patron who could both secure his interests domestically by giving him a free hand to go after his opponents, but also, you know, the ability to stand up to the two neighboring countries, Vietnam and Thailand, that had, you know, historically been the main sources of threat to Cambodian sovereignty. And so I think that the more, slightly more aggressive, forthright position that the Cambodian government takes has connected to that, you know, China's emergence as a serious power in Southeast Asia over the past two decades, and certainly since 2008, the time of the most recent border conflict. And so that's one aspect that I think is interesting and worth mentioning.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, the idea that China would step in, I think was never likely. And I don't think the Chinese wanted this conflict to any extent. It's interesting that they seem to have echoed the Cambodian position that the crisis should be resolved on the basis of international law. I don't think they've explicitly mentioned the ICJ, but you know, they've sort of made vague references to the need for that sort of mediated resolution. But look, I think there's a sort of geopolitics pilled online commentator who wants to insert all of these conflicts into a binary US-China situation. But really, the situation is much more complex than that. And yeah, you know, I think the presence of American and Chinese officials at the talks in Malaysia was interesting. But I think it displayed the fact that both wanted a swift. I think they were both lending their backing to the Malaysian effort to bring this conflict to a swift end. And yeah, that's pretty much it.
Yeah, no, that's useful. I mean, you know, I think for a lot of those so-called geopolitics-pilled commentators, it's often easy to forget the domestic political drivers of these types of disputes. And I think that was, you know, very helpful context here. So I think you've done, I mean, just a remarkable job of just kind of helping us contextualize all of this in just under 20 minutes here. But, you know, looking ahead with this dispute and kind of Thai-Cambodian relations, what are you going to be watching for in the coming weeks and months?
Well, I think, like, as you intimated before, I think the domestic reaction to this will be interesting.
Yeah.
In Cambodia, it's not such an issue because there's really no opposition within the country anymore that poses any serious threat to the Cambodian government. Inside Thailand, though, you know, Pe Tong Tan has been suspended and is very likely to be removed from office sooner or later. And then the question is, you know, what Thai government replaces it, what its political coloration is, will there be a new election, whether the border issue will once again, you know, figure into that. I suspect that this is going to die down and we're going to return to the unresolved status quo ante, and the border issue will remain dormant until the next conflict kicks off at some point in the future. But yeah, my prediction is that neither side has the political capital to make the concessions necessary to resolve this crisis on a, you know, a final basis, and so it's going to continue to drag on. But yes, I'll be mostly looking at domestic Thai politics and to see, you know, whether agitation over the border continues or whether everybody feels like their appetite for, you know, revenge against Cambodia or whatever is sated.
Great. Well, Sebastian, thank you so much for hopping on early your time to talk over these 4 days of clashes and the ceasefire. Really, really helpful context. I'm guessing listeners can find your thoughts to come on this soon at The Diplomat. So definitely go check that out if you're listening to this episode and you want to dig deeper into this.
Yeah, I did a big piece yesterday, actually, on the origins of the conflict and some of, and how this fits into the domestic politics on both sides. Of course, it was published almost to the minute that the ceasefire was announced, rendering it slightly moot. But I think if people are interested in the deeper story of what's driving this these periodic conflicts between the two countries, it would be worth checking out. It's on the Diplomat website at the moment.
Absolutely. No, I think that's a, you know, history unfortunately doesn't immediately become moot, I guess, with these kinds of developments. But thanks again for taking the time, and I'll look forward to having you back on the next time we have a flare-up in Southeast Asia.
Thanks, Ankit. Speak to you soon.
For listeners, make sure you keep up with future episodes. You can do that easily by subscribing. And if you've been a subscriber to the show, but you haven't yet left us a review, please do that. You can do that anywhere you get your podcasts. It really does help us grow the show. And finally, if you have suggestions for future topics that you'd like to see covered on the podcast, do reach out to us on social media or by email. Thanks a lot for listening, and we'll be back soon with more.